Welcome, everyone. I'm Aura Kanagas. I'm the Director of the Office of Public Policy and Advocacy for AFSC. I'd like to start by welcoming all of you on behalf of everyone here at AFSC, and thank you for your support and your interest in our work. The call today is part of a series where we offer our supporters and our donors a chance to learn more about our work, speaking directly with those who are on the front lines. For those of you who might be new to AFSC, we are a Quaker organization that has been working since 1917 for a world in which all people can live in peace. And most importantly, we understand that peace requires much more than the absence of war and violence. When we work for peace, we need to be ready to work for just social and economic conditions that are necessary to sustain peace in the world. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking to you with Bridget Moix, who until very recently was the lead foreign policy lobbyist for the Friends Committee on National Legislation, and who is now consulting for FCNL on an exciting collaboration now underway between FCNL and AFSC. So Bridget and I will be updating you about that new initiative. And as individuals who have history with both organizations, we're both excited for this week to really explore advancing a unified Quaker vision for an alternative approach to U.S. foreign policy that can capitalize on the many strengths of each organization and its constituencies. For those who may be less familiar with FCNL, FCNL works in Washington to represent the advocacy priorities of Quakers from across the country and across the world. And I often come across the question of, well, why does AFSC have an office in Washington when FCNL has it all covered? So the vision for our Office of Public Policy in Washington is to represent the experience and expertise of AFSC's program work on the ground, domestically and internationally, in the halls of Congress. And that often has us working on very similar issues to FCNL, but often with some different pieces to bring to the table. So we're very close partners in Washington and allies, and we work together on a daily basis in many forms. But this special collaboration, we hope will take things to a new level and provide a special chance for Quakers and Quaker institutions to have to articulate a concrete way forward in U.S. foreign policy that really sets forward the vision for what 50 or 100 years from now not only might be possible, but must be possible. So thank you for joining us. And with that, I will turn things over to Bridget to tell us a bit about the genesis of this project and its shape at this point. And just to let folks know at the front end, Bridget has a half an hour with us, so I will turn things right over to her.
Great. Thank you so much, Aura, and thanks so much for inviting me to be on the call. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. We are very excited about this collaborative project, and I want to go a little bit further into telling you what it is we're trying to do, why we're trying to do it, and how we'll go about it, and how we hope some of you and others who are involved with both FCNL and AFSC will be involved. The project is sort of our working title for it, I use, is Re-envisioning U.S. Foreign Policy, a Quaker Perspective. And it is, as Aura said, an effort to try to articulate a different vision, a Quaker perspective, on what U.S. foreign policy could look like in the future. It's a visionary, long-term project. It's not something we expect to develop into policy proposals and move through Congress in the next few years. It's really along those lines of trying to think bigger and broader. I often think of Elise Boulding and her idea of looking generations into the future, or thinking of the recent Peace Prize given to the European Union and how William Penn had written tracts hundreds of years before that about how a unified peace could move forward in Europe. So those are the Quaker groundings that I think of when I try to step into the work of this project. What we hope to do is to, in a very practical sense, produce a document that is nurtured by both organizations and that has input and broad testing and editing that's already underway. I can tell you there's a lot of great perspectives that we're trying to incorporate into it that really offers a different approach to U.S. foreign policy than what we're being given as our options right now. And that document, we hope, will be something that offers people at the community level a tool for educating their communities and their members of Congress and policymakers. I'll talk more about the process in a minute, but a little bit about why we thought that it was important to try to articulate a Quaker vision of a different U.S. foreign policy. If you were like me and you watched the presidential debates over the last few months, particularly maybe the foreign policy debate, you might have been struck by what appears to be a very narrow set of choices as to how the U.S. thinks it can engage with the world. And that set of choices, sometimes I would say to people, it seems that our policymakers are giving us the options of all war all the time or high-tech assassination as how the U.S. will engage with the world. And that is quite disturbing when we think about the work on a day-to-day basis that we're trying to do against that to move positive change forward. And why is it that our vision of U.S. foreign policy is so grounded in militarized relations with the world? It can't shake free, can't be loosened up. And so that's why we started to think about how to articulate a different vision, one grounded in Quaker experience around the world over history. And so thinking about a collaborative effort that would involve FPNL's foreign policy expertise, lobbying capacities, focus on moving proposals forward that do speak to long-term and short-term change, coupled with AFSC's experience of direct work with communities in the U.S. and around the world on issues of militarization and peacebuilding. We thought that perhaps it would be a moment that we should sit together as organizations, engage friends, engage a lot of wise minds with us in a process of trying to articulate what a different vision might look like and how we might get there. So what we want to do is lay out a new vision. We also want to be conscious that our efforts will be geared toward then what's the path to act of action towards that vision? How do we begin now moving towards that 50-100-year different approach where the U.S. is engaged with the world in a very different way? So we are engaged in this process already, in this project. I think of it in two phases. I think of a conversation and a writing process that we're beginning, and we have a document that's beginning to be drafted, that we're getting input from Quakers who have long-term foreign policy experience, who have experience working at the local community level on peacebuilding, who work inside Quaker organizations, but also other voices of people from outside the Quaker world. We will engage in getting feedback on the document as well so that we can have something that will speak from a Quaker perspective, but hopefully to a wider audience. So that phase is underway, and what we hope to do is have a very broad consultative process where we're engaging people in it through next spring or summer or so, when we will actually produce a document that will be publicly available then in the spring or summer with both AFSC and FCNL distributing that document. And we hope that'll be a tool for you at the community level to engage in that. And the phase two then is really going to be, how do we do broader outreach, work with communities, use it in a listening process, think about how to act in direct lobbying and other ways to move towards that vision. I'll just close now with a couple other thoughts about where this process is going, because I think the most interesting will be to talk more about your questions and about what people have on their minds about this project. But the way that I think about how we articulate a new vision for U.S. foreign policy, in addition to changing the frame of how the U.S. engages with the world from one of us versus them to one of shared security, where we truly understand that our security is linked directly with the lives and security and well-being of other people around the world, but also that we engage in U.S. foreign policy making from grounding of different principles than we now see. The four principles that I think of in the framework now, and in a sense I'm testing these with you, so I welcome your feedback on these. One is a need for a refocus on peaceful ends through peaceful means, or what you could call a new U.S. foreign policy toolbox. How do we demilitarize U.S. foreign policy so that what the world sees is not just soldiers and military faces around the world, but actually a civilian, responsible civilian engagement, effective and ethical tools that we use that match means with ends. I think of a second principle that is the planetary imperative, which addresses the environmental crisis that our world is in and a serious change needed to how the U.S. consumes resources and treats the earth. I think of a third principle of right relationships. for a New World Community. This goes to the serious problems of economic crisis and deeply ingrained and growing inequality in the world. And fourth, I think of restorative processes for healing a broken world. And how do we begin to build what we're learning about restorative justice, reconciliation, and nonviolence into U.S. foreign policy? So those are some of the broad outlines of how we might approach a vision, Quaker vision, for new U.S. foreign policy. And finally, I would just say that the practicalities of this, eventually we hope get down to, you know, what FTNL and AFSC do best, which is community engagement and citizen lobbying. And as some of you may know, FTNL is having a annual meeting this weekend and is having just today its first Quaker Public Policy Institute looking at some of the issues of military budget and militarization of foreign policy. And this is probably the biggest lobby day, I think it is, in numbers that FTNL has organized. So there are more Quakers and others converging on Washington right now to lobby for reducing U.S. militarization of foreign policy than there have ever been. So that gives me great hope. I'll turn it back to you, Aura.
Thank you so much, Bridget. As you can see, this is an exciting initiative that we're embarking on. One of the challenges, I think, for FCNL and AFSC, and also, you know, for like-minded people across the globe, is how do you hold the vision of what should be the bigger picture 50 to 100-year plan of how we can see our societies choosing more effective tools than violence and war, while also engaging the policy conversation where it is today, in ways that are relevant and help to get us where we need to go. The document that we're laying out attempts to do that in a range of ways, but also in our day-to-day work, we need to hold both the vision and the next week. So, for example, Congress is now back for the lame duck session in Congress, and FTNL is meeting that lame duck with this wonderful Policy Institute advocacy effort that Bridget spoke to briefly. AFSC has done a petition that will be shared with the White House, calling on them to follow through on their commitments in the campaign. We're organizing in-district congressional visits to both approach new members of Congress, but also to, with existing members, make clear the message that no grand bargain should be struck that lets the military off the hook on the backs of human needs, that doesn't have the wealthiest in our society paying their share, that no deal is better than a bad deal. So those are some of the short-term efforts during the lame duck that we have underway. And with that, particularly given Bridget's limited time, I think we should open up the floor to questions. I know one question came in already about, you know, meetings with members of Congress and how difficult it is to get a meeting with the actual member and how to make the most of meetings with staff. And as Bridget and I both know from what is for me now 17 years in lobbying, that was never the plan, but somehow Washington has sucked me in. Sometimes the best place to be is with the staffer, because the member is pulled in many, many different directions. They are the sort of top line snapshot view people. And the staff are where the depth is. The staff are the ones who are writing up the pros and cons for signing on to a particular bill. They're guiding their member on strategy on a whole range of issues. So I think in general, one should never feel it is a lost opportunity to meet with a staffer. That can be one of the most significant ways to have impact.
Okay, so we're going to open up the lines now. And if you have a question, please feel free to ask it. If you want to share your name, we would love that as well.
Yeah, I'm George Thomas from Rio Rancho, New Mexico.
Hi, George.
Hi, and I in the realm of foreign policy, I know that AFSC often operates in ways and in places where no one else dares to go. They were path breakers in Palestine and certainly in Vietnam. The last frontier might be Cuba, and I'm interested to know how, through people-to-people or other mechanisms, AFSC teaming with the FCNL might move the ball forward there.
That's a great question, and I'm happy to say that our International Programs Executive Committee has been working for some time now to develop an effective Cuba program, reaching out primarily through Quakers in Cuba. There's a small, vibrant community of Quakers in Cuba who are linked in that that a number of friends organizations have been liaising through. So I'm not an expert in the exact contours of the plan that's underway, but it's essentially work on the ground. So that work on the ground that has a component, has as a component, or intent, the bigger work to affect change in U.S. policy in relation to Cuba.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question. Carol Boucher. We all joined you to hear what you have to offer, but now what do you want us to offer?
That's a great question.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't come here to just sit and go, oh, that was really interesting.
I think there are a couple of really important ways we'd love for you to engage. I mean, one is, you know, in the short term to engage in things like in-district lobby visits, because, you know, I think one thing that we saw very clearly in this last election is that the fundamental antidote to the overwhelming influence of money and power in politics is to have an electorate that steps up and says, no, thank you. I'm actually going to vote not for what the ads tell me right before an election. I'm going to vote my conscience, and I'm going to have a relationship with my policymakers that is ongoing and sophisticated at a level that you can't, that I'm going to actually be looking at the voting record of these people. I'm going to be in dialogue with these people. Your elected representatives belong to you. So I think in terms of the big picture long-term policy changes that both FCNL and AFSC are working to attain, it may feel frustrating to do one lobby visit. What's it going to change? But if you can start to build advocacy and relationship to your elected policymakers into a habit where they know that there's going to be accountability for the votes they make in Washington, it can have a profound effect over time. And a few active voices on a particular issue can really have an effect. That's one front. The other front, in terms of the collaboration now underway with AFSC and FCNL, the Foreign Policy Project, it's our hope that, you know, we're in the very early stages at this point, so the points of entry are limited at this point. So, but the action would be to stay tuned, because this is going to be coming to you in a form for your input, your thought, and also starting to talk about in your communities that the line that violence and war are inevitable or are the only tools for change, we're just being sold a bill of goods on that, and that we see concrete alternatives, and here they are. Bridget, do you have things to add on the what to do here and now?
Well, yeah, thank you for the question. You know, I'll share a story of how I hope that people might engage in this project. And it's actually something that an FCNL constituent shared with me. There's a small group of folks, including some Quakers and others, out in the Pacific Northwest, have begun to meet and talk about a vision for ending war, and that they are inspired about the idea for ending war. And one of the ideas that we had for this project was that once this document is out, that it can be used by groups who want to engage with this question as a study circle, as a way of engaging a Quaker meeting or a faith community or a community, another community organizing group that you work with, to use it as a way of grounding the day-to-day work in a longer vision, so that you could think about now how in my community, what are the points of entry in my community for beginning a dialogue with people about a different approach to the world, a different approach for U.S. engagement with the world. Who would I naturally want to bring into that conversation, and how might I go about it? And then, who are the people that I probably wouldn't first think of or wouldn't want to think of engaging, and how might we think about engaging them? Because I think that will be even more important, is how do we engage with people beyond our comfortable circles, to have a real discussion about the realities, the hard realities of U.S. foreign policy and the assumptions, which go very deep into our culture and our mindset as people in this country about the role of this country in the world. How do we have a discussion and a dialogue about that and about what could be a different approach? And so I would love for people to start thinking now about, you know, are there groups within your community or that you know of that you would like to engage in this project? I welcome people communicating with me if you have ideas, if you have questions. I'm happy to hear from people, you know, outside, offline the call as well.
Well, one of my senators, Bob Menendez, happens to be one of the roadblocks on recognizing Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
He's really adamant. His parents came to this country. I think he was born in Cuba, I'm not sure. But his parents came to this country from Cuba. And as far as I know, still dead set against recognizing Cuba.
Right.
And that appears to me to be entirely punitive.
Right.
Because Cuba is not a threat to this country. So I think I'm going to start working on Bob.
Good. Yay.
Great idea. Excellent.
And I think, you know, the sanctions policy, the strident sanctions policy we've seen in Cuba, like the sanctions in North Korea, like the sanctions in Zimbabwe, like the sanctions in so many places where AFSC works, have demonstrated that the pain ends up with the people who can least afford the pain, and the change is...
And are least responsible for...
Right, they're least responsible, and that sanctions, like war and violence, are extremely ineffective tools for getting to the changes we actually need, and that it's dialogue and engagement and all of the things that we have been defunding and shortchanging in our foreign policy toolkit that are the actual things that can affect change. So I'm glad you'll be working on Bob. You're going to need to, that there are a range of great things to engage him on, and Cuba is at the top of the list.
I have a question. This is Lorna in Seattle. Can you hear me?
Yes. Hi, Lorna.
Hi. Do you anticipate thinking about a speaking tour in connection with this project?
We've definitely talked about that the roadshow is an aspect of the sort of next steps. We haven't made concrete plans, but does that sound like something that would be helpful?
I think it is, frequently.
Bridget, do you want to comment?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. We had thought a little bit more about a listening tour, in a way, listening circles, I think, is a model that AFSC has used in other work. Listening project, but it's interesting to hear you say maybe a speaking tour would be useful, and that's worth thinking about for sure.
Just a comment. One of the problems is, over the years, foreign policy has become more and more militarized, and it's not just weapons and boots. It's the State Department's budget has more and more been shifted over to the military, and it what used to be the State Department's domain, implementation and, you know, negotiations, has more and more shifted over to the military. And I'm not quite sure how you get at that in terms of starting to shift it back.
Yeah, exactly.
The fact is that that's a huge, that's been an ongoing process probably since the end of the Second World War.
Right. It's huge, and it's certainly something that we address in the document, and Bridget can say more, but I think a poignant moment happened not too long ago when Secretary Gates at the time tried to move some money from the military budget back into the State Department, and Congress said, oh, great, well, then we'll cut the State Department budget in this other area because they don't need it. Money has a hard time moving back once it goes into the Pentagon.
This is something that serious realization of this problem, this deeper problem of militarization, and FCNL has worked on it a lot in trying to focus on funding some specific programs within the State Department and USAID that support violence prevention and deadly conflict prevention. And so there's been a lot of work on that has made some progress, and I was very happy to be part of that work. And the folks are lobbying on it today and tomorrow who are here in Washington. So there are some places where we've been able to find a little bit of opening and push for instance, the creation of a new fund that's dedicated to preventing and responding to violent conflict that didn't exist before. That's now in the USAID and State Department's budget. But I think part of what we realize is that change, it's so hard to get just a little. That was a little $50 million fund that it took us like 3 years, plus, you know, 10 years before that, advocating for a shift to preventing deadly conflict to get passed through Congress. And every year it is a huge struggle just to keep that funding from going completely away. That compared to this huge military budget that just keeps growing and growing and nobody wants to cut, even though the generals are saying cut it. And so that, I think, is why this project, we felt that it was a moment to say, we need to keep doing that day-to-day work on the specific state budget lines. That's critical. But what, you know, there's a deeper problem here, and how do we begin to articulate a different approach that could help us get out of this box that U.S. foreign policy has become stuck in. I'm going to have to also take this moment to sign off and say thank you so much. I'm sorry that I have to leave you a little bit early, but I really appreciate having been on the call. So thank you all so much.
Thank you so much, Bridget.
Bye-bye.
We can take more questions if there are questions that I can answer, but I also want to point out some resources for folks since it sounded like there was some appetite for action, which is great. Tay can give you some of the specific links, but there's on the Wage Peace section of the AFSC website, there are some tools for engaging in the lame duck session, tools for visiting your newly elected representative or your existing, continuing representative or senator. There's the petition to the administration, to the president, asking him to keep his promises and to invest in ensuring that all people can live with dignity and be able to meet basic needs, and ensuring that runaway military spending and special tax breaks to the wealthiest don't win out over those human needs. So those are some of the tools that you can use in the near term.
I would like to say something. My name is Marilyn Zuckerman from Seattle, and I have been active in peace work for a long time, as well as other political things, but I'm at the age now where I can't really do anything in that sense, but that is demonstrations or even maybe visits. But one of the things that I'm wondering is, what you're trying to do is to reach across to people, and I'm wondering, with your new activism, whether you would be interested in teach-ins rather than just a speaking tour.
Yes, I think that some of what Bridget was saying was it was listening sessions that we had kind of thought about, and so in some ways the intersection of listening and speaking is teaching. And so I think the teach-in idea is a great one. And particularly the next generation, has grown up in this era of perpetual war. We're now in a state where there has been no peace dividend from the end of the Cold War. That's been squandered. There's been no peace dividend from the end of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, or, well, the wind down in Afghanistan. We're still in there. And so there's not,
Well,
so there's a lot of education to be done.
Yes. We talked a lot during the late election about low-information voters.
Yeah.
I think young people certainly belong in that category.
Yeah.
And I remember hearing recently Nadia Benjamin saying that there is no anti-war movement. Well, I mean, that's one of the things that I hope you've got on your list. And I think that, generating teach-ins and giving people information, there are so many great resources along, people like Basevich and his books about permanent war.
Right.
I think it's really important that people do learn about what's going on, because they're ignorant.
Absolutely. And one of the things that AFSC takes very seriously is public education and movement building. So I think, I've just been for the last couple of days here in Chicago in a planning meeting with the Wage Peace staff from across the AFSC. So folks who are working at the local level, the policy level, a number of different fronts, domestically and internationally, to challenge paradigm of war and violence and to propose alternatives, and we're coming up with some really exciting ideas here. So they're not cooked enough that I can share them, but stay tuned, because there's some real dynamic work coming.
Yes, I think the fact that you're doing this document, and I think it's a perfect time, because the timing after this election is that we have so many more liberals who were elected, particularly in the Senate, that we can perhaps, get a little further than during that time when everything seemed so tied up.
Yes.
And shut down.
Yes.
I mean, this feels like an opening wedge at this point.
Let's hope so.
Well, I think it's up to us.
Yeah. So let's make it so.
Yes. Anyway, I'm very thrilled that you're thinking of doing this new approach to activism, and I will be waiting to hear.
Great.
The next step.
Thank you.
This is George Thomas again. I spent 20 years in the Washington area with the CIA, and during that time, I had occasion to invite a number of AFSC field workers in Southeast Asia to visit and chat with CIA analysts, and these visits were always 100% acclaimed by the analysts who had never been exposed to AFSC projects.
Wow, interesting.
And I hope, now this was on, you know, Southeast Asia during the embargoed times when the Indochina countries were blacklisted and sanctioned. And if you could do that type of thing with either CIA people, and one way to do it might be to attend conferences like the Association for Asian Studies and whatever the homologue might be for Latin America, to you know, get your brand established with the young analysts who know nothing, low information voters. The lady just on the line mentioned that pertains to these young people working for the CIA and the Pentagon, because they grew up in the same system that the low information voters grew up in. And I just, you know, just an idea to, it may be worth your while.
Yeah, that's a great, great suggestion, and I'm excited to hear about that work. I know we've had pockets of work like that, and I'm glad to know I've made a note of your name. You may hear from us.
Yeah, but, I'm a regular contributor for what it's worth.
Great.
We had a house guest from FCNL, a lady named Ruth Flower.
Yeah.
And she told me, and this was absolutely news to me, I'd never heard it before, that FCNL has people on staff who are retired military and are tremendously effective in, you know, writing about waste and fraud in the military.
Right. When I was on staff at FCNL, Dan was a wonderful retired military person on staff who wrote extensively and wittily and wonderfully. He's passed away, but there's a young former Iraq War vet who's on staff as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these people have, in the current climate, particular credibility in society and particularly in government. And it, you know, if that can be leveraged by people smarter than I, which is just about everybody, because I don't have a lot of, you know, diplomacy and tact things that I can call to bring to bear. But you can, you know, the more access these people get, you know, the easier your objective will be reached.
Right.
So I just wanted to throw that out and thank you for all the good work you're doing.
Yeah, I think that's great and really important. And I think it's always important to remember that these systems are made up of people, and you change systems by changing people.
And that, you know, I'm not suggesting that AFSC staff enlist in the military. I'm just saying that the, you know, the military can be reachable.
Right.
And they can be useful.
Absolutely.
But your staff people with direct country experience in Palestine, in these places that we don't get an alternative view.
Right.
You know, one of the best, well, I've been out of touch for a while, but 30 years ago, AFSC put together a slideshow on Central America.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, it was really old tech. It wasn't, you know, they were, you know, transparencies on a,
right,
you know, projection. And I showed that to military and CIA audiences. And this was the first exposure they'd had to anything but the party line.
That's great.
And any fora, any opportunities you have to engage, I hope you will. And I thank you for listening.
Thank you. I think what you've said is really important, and also the harkening back to some of our history is important. I'm a second generation ASSU staff person. My dad was part of NARMIC, the National
Military Industrial Complex.
And some of my earliest memories are of that Philadelphia office, coming to work with him. But I think remembering what we've been and some of what we've done and some of the tactics that have worked well, evolving those tactics, and understanding that this is all part of a long-term arc of changing deeply entrenched systems and policies. So.
Yeah. Well, good luck.
Thank you.
So I think I'll ring off unless there's more to be heard.
Okay, are there other questions?
We only have a few moments left. We have time for maybe one more question, if anyone has one.
This is Chris Logan in, West Virginia. I'm a retired Foreign Service officer, and I'd like to just ditto what I think George just said about the State Department and USAID. It's also easy. I think we can get an alliance between people who work for the government and our U.S. military and the Congress through in just exactly in the manner that he described. Go make representations and attend, be there at fora where government people attend. Any access that you have to government people, they will be on your side. There are many already there.
Yeah.
So I think it's an excellent suggestion.
That's great. We've definitely found that it's wonderful to have folks who are retired CIA, who are retired Foreign Service on this call, because absolutely, it's, again, one of the core components of changing a system is reaching the people within it and being in dialogue. And I think we can learn as much as, you know, as they in those cases. You can get a sense of what's going on the inside in institutions, what some of the challenges are. So I think that's great. And we may be tapping those of you with these ideas for some thoughts as we follow up.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much for having the call.
Yes. Thank you.
I have one more question.
Yes, ma'am.
You have everybody's name and email address from this call, right?
Okay.
If you are on our list and this is how you found out about the call, we do have your email.
You're going to stay in touch with us as well?
Absolutely.
Good.
Yeah.
And if anyone, you know, instead of trying to find your way around the website, because you know exactly what you want from the call tonight, from the resources that Ara spoke of, if you just email ask@assc.org that you want the resources that were mentioned tonight, I can send you direct links to that information so you can have it right at your disposal.
And I'll also give you my email address now if anyone wants to follow up. It's A. Kanagas, K-A, N as in Nancy, E, G as in George, I, S as in Sam, @assc.org. And this has been an engaged and lively and thoughtful group. I've been honored to have some time to talk with you all. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I appreciate it, Tay, and I appreciate all of you on the call. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Take care.
Everyone have a safe night.